Hello, America, and to all of our listeners all around the world. You are listening to a pre-election episode of Let's Weekend. I'm your host, my friend Perkins. Joining me as always is Chris Elogi, and Teresa Sammons is also joining us tonight as well. Say hi to the people, gang.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, so we are recording this, it is November the 2nd, 2024. We are now officially 3 days, well, it'll probably be 2 days when this goes up, away from the 47th presidential election. And it cannot come soon enough because I am sick of this shit.
I mean, that's probably still too soon.
Yeah. But yeah, so obviously, being that that is going to be what's on everyone's mind over the next couple days, we got a bunch of today's show basically dedicated to that, but not just that. We've also got some other stuff. We got some more shows about January 6th and people involved getting their legal just desserts. We also have some rampant cheese theft in the United Kingdom. We also have shenanigans happening over at the Washington Post. And of course, as always, we've got our entertainment section with a bunch of announcements and trailers to look at and discuss. All that and more on this week's episode of Let's Weekend. So, with that out of the way, before we get into the meat of it, we shall, as is tradition, talk about all the things we've been doing up to this point this week. And as also is tradition, we start with Chris. Chris, what have you been doing this week?
Mostly working. Been pretty busy this week, so I haven't had a ton of time for things, but I managed to watch some stuff. I watched Agatha All Along. I finished that up as the last episode's up, which ended very well. Turned out to be kind of a very good follow-up to WandaVision, focusing on Agatha Harkness and some of the stuff going on there. And yeah, turned out to be quite a good show. And a good like Halloween kind of show as well. With plenty of spooky vibes and all that. So yeah, definitely recommend checking that out if you enjoyed WandaVision and want some follow up there, though you obviously don't get anything with the Scarlet Witch, but everything else you kinda get some cool stuff there. But yeah, let's see. Also been watching Pokemon, the original show, which I think they call Indigo League. It's on Netflix. And boy, like 20 episodes in, they do not pull punches. This will be about within the first month of starting watching it as a kid. They decide to have a big episode where Butterfree leaves the party to go with a mate. And that's played off as a very kind of emotional scene and all that. And it's like, man, you're doing this to children, like weeks after they get into the show. That's some fucked up shit there. And then like a little bit later, Pikachu gives up his primeape, I think, because it's going to go become a professional fighter. With a little less fanfare there, but at that point, they're like, oh, he's hemorrhaging Pokemon now. What the hell's going on? Manages to catch a Muk, which stinks into Pokeball, so he sends that off to Professor Oak to deal with. And it's like, oh, he's not... I don't know if he has a full six Pokemon roster at the moment where I'm at, which I just watched the Ditto episode. This show like gets into some really Saturday afternoon cartoon kind of shit. There's the previous episode with the bike gang, as Ash is trying to deliver medicine to the nearby Pokemon Center, and they get into a tuffle with the local bike gang and all that, and that's just a weird episode, especially as you find out that Jesse and James were in there at one point, that James needed training wheels when he was in the bike gang, which was like, okay, this is some weird stuff, but whatever. But yeah, that's been fun to kind of dip into as I'm doing some other stuff. And then I've caught up on Dragon Ball Daima, which are now finally three episodes in, starting to get to the meat of the show, mm-hmm. versus having this kind of introductory stuff at the very beginning, introducing the bad guys and all that, and the premise of what's going on,
mm-hmm.
To them actually turning into kids and trying to figure out what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And that Dende has been taken by the Demon Realm people,
mm-hmm.
and that being a bad thing because there's no, obviously no protector for the Earth.
Mm.
But also everybody has been turned into kids, though the wish doesn't make any sense because I believe they specifically say everybody that fought Majin Buu, mm-hmm. turned into children, but like Chi-Chi gets turned into a kid, Bulma, you know, a bunch of these side people that did not actually fight him.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what the logic is there, other than they're just trying to create like a new Dragon Ball GT, essentially, with some new adventure to go on that, mm-hmm. you can easily toss aside, because the notion of this journey that happens between the end of the Buu arc and the last few episodes with Oob, in that time period, that's like, mm-hmm. easily thrown away. But yeah, that's been fun to kind of see some actual progression of Goku in the Demon Realm.
Mm-hmm.
So there's been like some weird elements of it, like the none of them can fly super well because they're not used to flying in their small bodies, so that supposedly throws them off. So like Goku nearly flies off the lookout.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, and I'm like, wait, he can fly, and he eventually just flies off to do his own thing, to go, mm-hmm. find his power pole. But yeah, it's like he's still having trouble, like apparently potentially falling off of things, even though he can fly still.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you're flying out in the open, there's no real danger there, but they're just weird about it.
Yeah,
I guess probably trying to create some friction against, like, why don't they just do this or this? Mm-hmm. They're still not supposedly in well tuned for doing things as kids, as far as fighting and all that. So yeah, but it's pretty decent so far. But I think these three episodes are the ones they're going to release into theaters with the dub versions. So that'll be interesting. I don't know if I'll go for that kind of thing, but that could be neat. But yeah, that's been pretty much what I've been watching. For things I've been playing some more Rocket League. Mm. Their Haunted Hallows Halloween event's still going on for a few more days, which this time they're not really sponsored or, you know, partnering with any sort of horror movie IP or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
They're like partnered with Marvel for Spider-Man and Venom, essentially, mm. which is like, it's getting some flack on that kind of stuff, where it's like, this isn't really Halloween vibes. It's not like Stranger Things or Ghostbusters or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
At least has a bit more going on there for that kind of season. But I can see like the Venom thing, but it's probably more tying into the movie coming out than anything. So, but yeah, that's been fun. And then, yeah, Vampire Survivors, they just put out their new DLC for Castlevania.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll talk more about this on Day Zero, but it's some of the most ridiculous DLC I've seen in a while that they've mm-hmm. done. Because it is just, let's say, having all the Castlevania stuff in it just lets them kind of go overboard with a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
And the map is pretty well done for being kind of exploration-y in the way that's, you know, the Symphony of the Night kind of entries into series have, but doing that in Vampire Survivors is pretty silly mm. in a lot of ways. Having you have to like spawn in bosses to beat them to open up more areas to get through the castle and all that is just pretty well done, and they do some nice stuff in the inside those castles, so you get a lot of good Castlevania sound effects and such. And weapons and characters, you know, you find out who the hell Leon Belmont is,
mm-hmm.
Which I would figure most people probably don't know which game that character is in. And it's Lament of Innocence, the PS2 game. He's the earliest Belmont. So yeah. But that's been pretty much what I've been doing. So how about you, Teresa?
Yeah, Teresa, what about you?
Well, probably the most important thing I did this week was go and early vote. So that is done. all of my family that I think is going to do it has done it. So we got that out of the way. And then it was time to enjoy Halloween.
Mm.
So we did a lot of themed TV and some movies. Well, one of them, not really a movie, but kind of. Everybody does, you know, Charlie Brown, that we did that. We also do the old Disney one, The Legend of Sleepy Hollow, with Bing Crosby. So we hit that one again, and we pulled out a compilation Simpsons DVD set that we have for Treehouse of Horror and watched just a bunch. Watched the Witches episode from when Trump was in office. So, well, sometime between 2016 and 2020 for South Park. I'd forgotten a lot of that. That was kind of fun to watch again. Red Dwarf, some of the scary stuff there. Even Upstart Crow with the Hamlet thing with the three sisters. And Star Trek Next Generation, there was one that I know I've watched, but I just didn't remember any of it. It is Night Terrors. And that was seemed pretty fitting for Halloween. But we've also been watching, like, you know, what we've been keeping up with. We were on top of Daima as well. And we are watching through Super simultaneously, which really kind of is fun to have your brain get back to the path that it was on instead of the other one. What We Do in the Shadows, we are watching that. I think we might be one episode behind. They might have dropped it all completely, but I don't think they did. And then, you know, my usual Vampire Survivor. I did download the DLC this morning for Castlevania, and I haven't played it yet. I was playing one of the other DLCs. And Kingdom Two Crowns with that new DLC for the Greek myths. And there's another one that I've been playing. And we also got Super Mario Jamboree. That's kind of my thing. I know not a lot of people. Oh. Not a lot of Smash Bad people are going to be into it, but I've been enjoying it. We've played through two boards so far. So, you know, a lot of what it should be, not disappointing yet. And we have foster kittens, so holy crap. Keeping track of the kittens, keeping them clean. We were bottle feeding a little bit, but now they're eating on their own, and oh, God. You guys remind me next time I think about doing this. Tell me how much work it is. Yeah. No, that's really, and being constantly spun round and round by the news every single day. That's pretty much it. What have you been up to, Brandon?
Yeah. Well, as for me, I am just about, well, I say just about, I'm on chapter 10 of Dead Space, so I'm just about finished with it. And by this, I mean the most recent version, the remake, which, you know, compared to the last one, on top of being just so much more terrifying, is also a hell of a lot more unpredictable. Because, unlike in the first game, these creatures can basically come at you at just about any time, any place. And you know, that it's you always have to be on your toes, and you always have to be looking out for resources and stuff, because ammo is a commodity in this game, and it can run out very quickly. But yeah, it's still legitimately, like, I wasn't really sure when I started playing it, but, like, as soon as the game picked up pace, it was like, yeah, this game's great. This game's amazing. You know, and keep in mind, I played the original several times back when it originally came out, and the sequel. which I'm hoping they're also doing a remake of, because as good as the first game is, the sequel is absolutely amazing compared to it. And the first game was already pretty good. But on top of that, I'm also kind of stretching out, trying to play some other games. I played Tearaway Unfolded, which is sort of a remake of Tearaway, which was a PSP game. No, it was a Vita game from back in. It's a Media Molecule project, so you kind of know what you're getting from them. It's, you know, very, it's got that, you know, that witty British charm with a lot of nostalgia, and it's like takes place in like a paper craft world, and it tries to get you to, you know, use all the various ways that the PlayStation, the DualSense controller could be used. And yeah, it's just a fun, charming little game. But that's basically been it as far as gaming is concerned. I watched Long Legs the other day for Halloween. Don't know if any of y'all have seen that. That is a very creepy horror movie that came out a couple of months ago. That sort of, it took a little while, but it kind of finally found its audience, and now it's like it's heavily critically acclaimed. It has probably the best like role I've seen for Nicolas Cage in a long time, because you have, if unless somebody told you that it was Nicolas Cage, you would not know, because he is basically unrecognizable in this movie. And the character he plays is very unsettling. Do you guys remember that like guy from the 70s, the like ukulele player? What was his name? Tiny Tim?
Yeah.
He looks a lot like that and sounds like it too. And it's,
oh my gosh,
it is very unsettling. And there's only like 1 or 2 seconds in the whole movie where he'll say something or something in his cadence will change and you'll like, oh, that is Nicolas Cage, because otherwise you can't tell it's him at all. But basically what it is it's about this girl named Lee Harker who is a detective for police. It takes place in someplace in like the mid-90s, I think like 1995, 1996. And basically this town that she's in, for the last 20 years, they've been dealing with this really, this serial killer who calls himself Long Legs, who he's kind of like the Zodiac killer. He likes to like send out a bunch of like clues and stuff with like all kinds of coded messages and everything. And the thing is, even though they have so much evidence tying him to it, the problem is they can never directly show him doing it because he's always got some sort of alibi. And at the same time, she's sort of dealing with her sort of her highly religious mother. And there's all this weird stuff where it's like, I don't really want to spoil a lot of it, but essentially it's so good. It really is. And there's just so many things that are going on in it. It's one of those movies where like, you remember how like in The Exorcist where every so often like where Pazuzu would like flash onto the screen? Stuff like that happens. Like you'll see what they call the man downstairs, like he shows up like in plain sight at least like a dozen times in the movie. It's very unsettling. But yeah, it's a great movie. Highly recommend it. Other than that, just getting ready for the frickin' election, which is Tuesday. And I'm pretty much the only person in the family who hasn't voted already. Yeah. I've done it the traditional way since the beginning, and that's sort of what I'm doing. I mean, to be fair, like, I live in a tiny little place, so you know, we don't have a whole lot of people in my particular district who goes to vote at my area. So I'm not expecting like a long wait or anything. But yeah. So yeah, that's about it for me. You guys got anything you want to add before we move on?
No.
Nope.
All right. So with that out of the way, it is now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And this week, considering the subject at hand, I wanted to do a little bit of about, you know, the history of American politics, specifically the history of presidential elections. So one of the things that I really hate about American politics is this fault. How can I describe it? It's this false sense of civility. You know, this idea that, you know, when you're in an election, like there's this, like, you know, what, especially, and this is especially true with like Congress, especially, where they're constantly trying to get onto each other about, like, you know, oh, you don't say that. It's uncivil. We're supposed to be better than that. And it's bullshit. Because the truth of the matter is, America has been ruled by jerkbag politicians since the very beginning of this country's existence. And I really do mean the very beginning of it. We think about the idea, like, okay, yeah, Donald Trump, he's an asshole. Like, that is his crowning characteristic. He is a New York Yankee asshole. And, you know, he's vulgar, he's crass, we all know that. But the thing is, despite the fact that his language is very vulgar and crass, the thing about him, you know, his rhetoric and everything is unfortunately not new in American politics. It's always been there. And to prove it, I can go all the way back to the very first contested presidential election in American history. And that was the fourth presidential election of 1800 between Thomas Jefferson and John Adams. Now, keep in mind, Thomas Jefferson and John Adams, both of these men were founding fathers. We consider them founding fathers. Both of them were very much involved in the founding of our country and writing its founding documents and, you know, helping to shape its constitution. Well, mostly Adams. Jefferson was off in France at the time, but still. Both of them fought for our country's independence, at least on the diplomatic and political side. Jefferson, of course, famously worked as our ambassador to France, along with Ben Franklin. Adams was here. All of them, they are deeply connected to the founding of our country. So the American mythology would have you think that both of these men were these very high-minded, very high moraled, genteel individuals who thought nothing but political fairness, that this should be a good, clean race, and that nothing of all. They would never tell lies or, you know, say awful things about each other. Right?
Sure.
Yeah. So, let's start with the man who's considered the father of our country, George Washington. Now, back in this era, when it came to political parties, which were sort of a new thing in the United States at the time, you had two parties. One was the Federalists, and the other was the Democratic Republicans. John Adams, along with Washington, and of course Alexander Hamilton, were Federalists. Thomas Jefferson, along with James Madison and eventually Aaron Burr, were all Democratic Republicans. And they basically did not agree on, well, really anything. Their whole political ideologies were heavily skewed between the two. The Federalists believed in a strong centralized government with a pragmatic foreign policy, which, among other things, meant that they wanted to, one of the things they wanted to do is to try and rebuild diplomatic ties with Great Britain. The Democratic Republicans, on the other hand, believed in a more localist, decentralized form of government that supported the French, specifically the French Revolution, which, by the way, Thomas Jefferson, some of our founding fathers, such as Thomas Jefferson and Thomas Paine, were somewhat involved in the beginnings of that particular event. Now, remember, George Washington, in his farewell address before he, you know, ended his second and last term as president, one of the things he famously warned against was the creation of political parties, which, of course, as you can imagine, lasted all of about 5 seconds. In 1798, George Washington complained, quote, that you could as soon scrub the blackamoor white as to change the principles of a professed Democratic Republican, and that he will leave nothing unattempted to overturn the government of this country. Again, George Washington, founder of our country, guy who warned against the creation of political parties, basically calling Democrat Republicans a bunch of assholes. And of course, the thing is, it wasn't just inter-party politics that were, shall we say, volatile, but also intra-party politics. The Federalists, for example, were actually divided up into factions. You had the sort of moderate Federalists, which were more aligned with Adams and his sort of pragmatic foreign policy. And then you had what were called the High Federalists, which were more aligned with Alexander Hamilton. And Alexander Hamilton was famously, arguably, the most authoritarian of all of the founding fathers. He not only seemed to view the idea of, public, a wide franchise as irresponsible, he also believed in the idea that the president, when they are elected, should be president for life instead of being, president for a particular number of terms. And of course, he was also one of the first who wanted to begin rebuilding their ties with Great Britain for economic reasons. Oh, and he was also the guy that more or less helped inspire the federal response to the Whiskey Rebellion, which, was over the power to tax citizens, stuff like that. Already there was stuff going on in between them. But anyway, so then the actual election is ongoing, and so now they're putting out campaign stuff. Now, back in the day, there was this sort of gentleman's agreement. Again, and like I said, remember how I said about this concept of this sense of false civility in American politics? Well, it was a thing back then, too. It's always been bullshit. Both of these men agreed that they would not campaign against each other. The caveat being that they said they would agree not to campaign against each other in person. They could get other people to do that for them. So, for example, Thomas Jefferson had a gentleman by the name of James Callender, who was the editor of a partisan newspaper called The Prospect Before Us, which was also the name of a pamphlet that he ended up putting out. And it is quoted, and I'm quoting, and remember, this is from the guy that Jefferson authorized and worked and basically was a partisan that worked under him. Here it goes. Here's the quote. "Men of Virginia, pause and ponder upon those instructive ciphers and these incontestable facts. You will then judge for yourselves on the point of an American Navy. You will judge without regard to the prattle of a president, the prattle of that strange compound of ignorance and ferocity, of deceit and weakness, without regard to that hideous hermaphroditical character, which has neither the force and firmness of a man nor the gentleness and sensibility of a woman."
Wow, fucking roasted.
Yeah. Take your choice between Adams, Warren Beggary, or Jefferson, peace and competency. As for the Federalists, the ones who supported Adams. Well, they, among other things, accused the Democratic Republicans of being atheists. They claimed that they're amongst the various pieces of campaign material that was put out by Adams' partisans. They stated such things as if Jefferson is elected, the things such as rape, robbery, incest, and murder will be openly taught and practiced. The streets will bleed red with crimes. Chaos will reign, and all of those who oppose him shall be sent to the guillotine.
That's sounding familiar, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. Anyway, if you're wondering what ended up happening, Jefferson ended up winning that election. Famously, he ended up getting Aaron Burr as the man who was going to be his vice president. And of course, Jefferson decided, you know, in the following, they ran, you know, Burr would be his vice president. And then the following election, they both ran against each other. And Jefferson decided, Burr, you can go kick bricks. I'm getting somebody else. And as all Hamilton fans know, that was sort of the beginning of the end for Aaron Burr and his sort of beginning of his villain, villain origin story, more or less. But yeah, as far back as 1800, our politics have been this weird combination of false civility and dirty, dirty, underhanded bullshit mudslinging against each other. It's always been like that. It's never been different. Even as far back as the very men who founded this country. And that has been yet another installment of Brandon's Random Factoid. Yeah. So, anyway, moving on from there, it's now time to move on to the show proper. And as always, with the show proper, we start off with our assholes of the week. And we start off with the just a batshit crazy rally that former President Trump held at Madison Square Garden, which, among other things, started off with a insult comic going on stage and basically talking shit about Puerto Rico. That wasn't the only thing he said. It's just the one that ended up getting the most attention. And it basically turned pretty much the entirety of Puerto Rico and all Puerto Ricans against him. It's caused Bad Bunny, J-Lo, Ricky Martin have all decided to endorse Kamala. Even Puerto Ricans who previously supported him have turned on him. Yeah.
It's like, oh man, imagine if you'd listen to the things they said about other Latinos instead of just being like, well, that's not us. We're the good ones. It's like, he doesn't like any of you. But yeah, he basically said, yeah, let's see. These Latinos, they love making babies too. Just know that they do. There's no pulling out. They don't do that. They come inside just like they did to our country. And then decided to go to Puerto Ricans. There's a lot going on. I don't know if you guys know this, but there's literally a floating island of garbage in the middle of the ocean right now. I think it's called Puerto Rico. And it's like,
look, if this was like a roast, then yeah, you could get away with it. Because, you know, roasts are like, yeah, you basically go as far as you can.
Yeah.
This was a political rally for one of the major candidates for president of the United States.
Especially one that is home in New York City, that is home to one of the largest Puerto Rican populations in the country.
Besides Puerto Rico itself.
Yeah.
Especially of people whose votes counts in the election.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it is interesting that they'd make that choice to have this guy Tony Hinchcliffe, who I believe he has like a podcast as well, a comedy podcast, which I believe he goes by the name Fuck Tony there.
Yeah.
I only know that because he was on ESPN's College Game Day a month or so ago. Basically calling people gay on TV, and it's like, oh, I bet ESPN loves this choice to go for the young demographic here.
Yeah.
The edgy comedy thing, and it's like, okay. And yeah, as like you said, this guy's a roast comedian who is not cut out for a political rally.
No.
Because those jokes don't fly here.
No.
As much as he responded being like, saying something like, you know, nobody has any sense of humor.
Like, no, kind of dude. Like, look, he did a roast like a couple of months ago that of him that was videoed. And it's actually like, yeah, he does the same material, but it's funny in that context because it's supposed to be. It's a roast. You go as deep and as dark as you possibly can get away with. This is a political rally for one of the major candidates for president of the United States. The context is completely different.
Yeah. They basically said, yeah, like people like Tim Walz and AOC have no sense of humor, took his jokes out of context to make it seem racist, saying, I love Puerto Rico on vacation there. I made fun of everyone, watched the whole set. Like, just saying the word set shows you why you're not a fit for this rally.
Yeah.
But also a perfect fit because it was basically a Nazi rally.
Yeah, pretty much.
So you had Hulk Hogan be like, I don't see no Nazis here. And it's like, that's because you are one, you idiot. But yeah, this guy had some other choice stuff he said. I believe there was a joke about carving watermelon with black people. So
yeah,
you know, that kind of fun stuff. So yeah, that created the big controversy of the week, at least up to the next one we'll talk about a little bit later. But yeah, so much so caused a number of big celebrities from Puerto Rico to endorse Kamala Harris and speak out against this. And yeah, you don't usually see J-Lo talking any sort of politics stuff, but she definitely had to speak out as a result of this. So congrats. And yeah, the Trump campaign had to denounce this stuff, which is like, you should listen to every other Trump rally. It's full of this kind of shit. So yeah, there you go.
Yeah. So yeah, that was that. Then we move on to this thing that happened during a discussion at CNN. So they were talking about, I'm guessing it was Gaza related.
Yeah. No, they're talking about Madison Square Garden.
Well, yeah, they were talking about the Madison Square Garden thing. Okay. And basically, there were this tuffle. That started between Mehdi Hasan, who works for CNN, and this douchebag named Ryan Gerdusky. And at one point, he told Mehdi Hasan, quote, I hope your beeper doesn't go off during panel discussion. And that got him banned from future CNN appearances because take a wild guess what he's referring to.
Yeah, the attacks on Hezbollah,
mm-hmm.
which impacted a lot of civilians as a result. Yeah, this so much so that people were speaking, you know, against him during the rest of that talk.
Oh, and yeah.
CNN themselves put out a big statement shortly after saying there is just zero room for racism or bigotry at CNN or on our air. We aim to foster thoughtful conversations and debate, including between people who profoundly disagree with each other in order to explore important issues and promote mutual understanding. But we will not allow guests to be demeaned or for the line of civility to be crossed. Ryan Gerdusky will not be welcomed back to our network. Do you want to know what group this guy has affiliations with?
What?
The Project 2025 people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there you go.
Yeah, and yeah, so that happened. And then we got this news that ballot boxes in three different states were all set on fire.
Yeah.
And the guy who did it may attack boxes again soon.
Yeah. They're on alert for that. I believe there's more information in that article about the sort of car they may have, whatever they're looking for. Yeah. I believe he didn't have plates on the front of the vehicle, but did on the back, but they were illegible.
Mm-hmm.
What video they had of it. But yeah, set off fires in two of them. One in Oregon, I think in Portland area, and one in Vancouver, Washington.
Mm-hmm.
where potentially hundreds of ballots were badly damaged, and they've put out the word in those areas to be like, hey, if you put your box, your ballot in this box between, you know, X time and Y time, you know, please get in contact with us. We'll send out new ballots, or you can pick up new ones, I guess, probably get them replaced. And they definitely had hundreds of people reach out and get new ones. So that's great. But yeah, this is some awful shit, and makes it seem like we absolutely should not be having these ballot boxes in places without cameras nearby watching it.
Yeah.
Just to reinforce the security measures for this stuff. But yeah, well, hopefully this guy will be found and prosecuted for his attempts at probably voter intimidation and destruction of property and all that. Yeah, they believe he has probably plenty of experience in metal fabrication and welding based on the devices that were used for this. So yeah, hopefully they get found out. And also the devices might have had the message Free Gaza on it, so investigating whether that was to mislead or what.
Yeah.
I could see easily being some right-wing guy putting that on there and be like, oh, see, it's the leftist trying to stop, try to, you know, cheat in this election. It's like, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. So that shit happened. And then we move on to this. Jay Johnston, the actor probably best known for voicing Jimmy Pesto on Bob's Burgers, has been sentenced to 1 year in prison for his role in the January 6th insurrection.
Yep. Glad to finally get this guy sentenced, because he's been in the trial stuff for a while now. But yeah, he joined other rioters in a heave-ho push against police officers running a tunnel entrance to the Capitol during the January 6th riots. Also cracked jokes, interacted with other rioters as he used a cell phone to record the violence around him, which is always a smart move. He did express regrets, I think, in this trial that he made it more difficult for the police to do their job on January 6th. He said he never would have guessed that a riot would erupt that day. And it's like, I don't know, buddy. You seem to be right in the middle of it all. But as he said to the judge, that was because of my own ignorance, I believe. If I had been more political, I could have seen that coming, perhaps. The judge who sentenced Johnston to 1 year and 1 day of imprisonment allowed him to remain free after the hearing and report to prison at a date to be determined. Yeah, the judge said he recognizes that Johnston will miss out on caring for his 13-year-old autistic daughter while he's behind bars, but also said, but his conduct on January 6th was quite problematic, reprehensible, really. So yeah, that is, that sucks for his daughter, but if that was a concern of his, he really should not have done what he did. It seems like if you have somebody like that to take care of, you should prioritize that over dumb shit you're looking to do.
Yeah. And last for our assholes of the week, the guy that attacked Nancy Pelosi's husband with a hammer gets life in prison without the possibility of parole in a state trial.
Good.
But yeah, he's already been sentenced to 30 years in federal prison, so I assume he'll be in federal prison for 30 years until then he switches over to a California prison. For the rest of his life. So yeah, San Francisco jury in June found David DePap guilty of charges including aggravated kidnapping, first degree burglary, and false imprisonment of an elder. Before issuing the sentence, Judge Harry Dorfman dismissed arguments from his attorneys that he'd be granted a new trial for the 2022 attack against Paul Pelosi, who was 82 years old at the time. But the judge said, it's my intention that Mr. DePap will never get out of prison. He could never be paroled. Yeah, supposedly one of his defense attorneys asked him to consider his mental health in isolation and made him susceptible to online propaganda. Yeah, when given the chance to address the court prior to a sentencing, he dressed in prison orange and with his brown hair in a ponytail spoke at length about September 11th being an inside job, his ex-wife being replaced by a body double, and his government provided attorneys conspiring against him, saying, I'm a psychic, The more I meditate, the more psychic I get, which kind of seems like maybe a stage thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was reading the paper, but like that it was like, here, you read this and they won't send you to prison for the rest of your life. You know, that's a great tactic, but there you go. You'll never have to think about him again.
Yeah. So yeah, that was our assholes of the week, but we move on from there to our hero of the week, and that hero of the week is rapper Young Thug. He is a free man after what is basically the longest running criminal trial in the history of the state of Georgia, and it ended with him basically getting mostly just probation and some weird conditions that he's going to have to meet.
Yeah, this was a weird trial. He was arrested on charges in a sprawling gang and racketeering indictment, which include like RICO charges and some other stuff revolving around being involved in running gangs and such. Mm-hmm. And it seemed like they didn't necessarily have the evidence that necessitated these charges because they spent a lot of this time from when they arrested him to finally giving him a sentence that there's a lot of like dead time of them like fucking around a lot, trying to figure out what was going on. And so that ended up with him sort of being in the system for 2.5 years in prison, to where essentially he took a blind plea, I believe, meaning he was entering pleas without having a deal in place with prosecutors, sort of hoping that they would be lenient on him. He pleaded guilty to 1 gang charge, 3 drug charges, and 2 gun charges. He also entered a no contest plea to another gang charge and racketeering conspiracy charge. And had decided not to contest those charges, but could be punished as if he pleaded guilty. But yeah, he gave a total sentence of 40 years. The first 5 years would be served in prison, but that was commuted to time served for the last 2.5 years. Then he had 15 years on probation. And finally, a backloaded 20 years in prison will be commuted to time served if he complies with all the conditions of his probation. If he doesn't complete his probation successfully, he will have to serve those 20 years in prison. Prosecutors wanted Young Thug sentenced to 45 years, so 25 years in prison, the remaining 20 on probation. Charges against him carried a potential maximum sentence of 120 years in prison. This is probably the prosecutor. Asked the judge for a 45-year sentence with 5 in prison, commuted to time served, and 40 years on probation. But basically, the conditions is that he must stay away from the metro Atlanta area as defined by the census for the first 10 years of his probation, except for weddings, funerals, graduations, or a serious illness of an immediate family member. He can arrive 24 hours before the event and must leave within 48 hours after. But he must also return to the Atlanta area 4 times during each year of his probation to make an anti-gang, anti-gun violence presentation at a grade school, middle school, or high school, or at an organization like the Boys and Girls Club. Those visits count towards the 100 hours of community service he must complete during each year of his probation. That's a lot of 100 each year. He also cannot knowingly have contact with any member of a criminal street gang. Judge said that includes other people named in the indictment, with the exception of his brother and the rapper Gunna, with whom he has contractual obligations. He cannot participate in criminal street gang activity or promote any gang, including through hand signs. He also can't contact the victims in the case or their families. May not own a gun. Must not use drugs other than those prescribed to him. Must submit to random drug tests and must allow searches of himself and his property and electronics. So that's a lot.
Wow.
And I believe part of this, they were trying to submit evidence like lyrics from his songs that would prove that he was part of this gang and all that. And that was very much a contentious part of this whole thing. And so, yeah, the whole weird situation. Luckily, he is hopefully done if he's smart. And hopefully just deal with the probation stuff and all that and move on with his life.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll see how this goes for him. But luckily that whole weird chapter in Georgia history is done. Well, there you go.
Yeah. So that was a bunch of bullshit. Anyway. Now, with that, we move on from the show proper to the proper show proper. And our first story for the night has to do with the, shall we call it, outrage after President Joseph R. Biden made a, quote, garbage comment in response to that comedian's Puerto Rico joke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is a whole weird situation because, yeah, obviously Biden has his own speech impediment stuff that probably interfered a little bit in this, but part of it also came through the transcript, the official transcript from the White House for this, which the word he used in this was supporters. And it's like, what does that include, an apostrophe or not? And I believe the official transcript did not have it, but the White House altered it for their own transcript, which also caused a controversy as well in this. And it seemed, and he tweeted out later more of an explanation, that he referred to the hateful rhetoric around about Puerto Rico spewed by Trump's supporter at his Madison Square Garden rally is garbage, which is the only word I can think of to describe it. His demonization of Latinos is unconscionable. That's all I meant to say. But yeah, a lot of, let's say, drama accounts of Trumpers that basically took this all to mean like what happened with Hillary Clinton and the deplorable stuff. So obviously Biden is not running for election here. So what he says really has no matter to anything that's going on. Other than the Trumpers' persecution complex with all this and a lot of the media kind of taking offense on their behalf as a result of this in a weird way. So much so that, you know, this appeared on the front pages of like the New York Times and some other papers that, whereas, you know, things that Trump has said did not. And you're like, yeah, this seems like it's a slanted coverage where things Trump said is taken in a different context that doesn't merit being propped up like that as important things that are being said in a very shitty way. Which, like, immediately after he had that whole publicity stunt of him getting a garbage truck. He'd be like, oh, you think we're garbage? And I'm the garbage man. And it's like, I don't know that this is a slam in the way you think it is. And also, he nearly missed the door handle when he's trying to grab it and fell over. And there was a good bit where a comedian was acting like he was the driver that rode Trump around in the garbage truck. And, you know, talked about nearly crying and how cool of a guy he is. And so a bunch of Trump's Twitter people that do podcasts and all that shit were falling for that. And all that. So, yeah, that was a whole weird thing. Basically, Trump rode around in a trash garbage truck that had the Trump logo on it. That they were calling, like, Garbage Force One, something like that. Like, some real stupid thing. That's what he did his second to last week in this election.
Yeah.
In case you're wondering where the fuck we are at this point.
It's in a simulated reality. We're in a fever dream. None of this should be real.
Yeah.
The garbage truck, the McDonald's.
Exactly. Yeah.
That shouldn't be what a legit candidate that could win the election is doing.
Anyway, in other news, over 200,000 subscribers have canceled their subscriptions at the Washington Post. You can take a wild guess why.
Yeah. It might be even over like 250,000, but at the point that these numbers were coming out, that was roughly about 8% of the paper's paid circulation of roughly 2.5 million subscribers. Yeah, people essentially protesting Jeff Bezos blocking the editorial group's desire to put out an endorsement of Kamala Harris, as is tradition for every major newspaper, which increasingly is less and less of them. And it's not a, like, allegiance to a party or anything. It's just this is based on the proposals and whatnot that they have made. This is who we think is the candidate that our readers should select, or mm-hmm. if they somehow have not come to the conclusion on their own.
Mm-hmm.
And he put out his own op-ed after this that was really weird about how he has never interfered with the things that's going on there. And it's like, I don't know how you
mm-hmm.
can say this, but and expect everybody to believe it. Mm-hmm. And also talked about how his own other companies and their governments, contracts and such, that's a potential conflict of interest and all this. I'm like,
mm-hmm.
one, you're not a journalist. You don't get to say we in all this.
Yeah.
And also, nobody likes you.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're just a extremely rich dumbass who thinks he should be playing a huge role in all this.
Mm.
That's just being the guy that pays for everything that's going on.
Yeah.
But he seems to want more conservative coverage in the paper and all that. And it's like, I don't know what that means other than just people making stuff up.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Yeah. So that happened. Golly. And now from out of the UK, this just, it's like one of those stories where it's like, it's just, it's so unbelievably British. Imposters stole thousands of pounds worth of posh cheddar cheese in the UK.
Yeah. Yeah, they apparently have arrested a 63-year-old man in connection with the quote-unquote cheese heist of 2024, in which tens of thousands of pounds of high-value cheddar were stolen from a major distributor. London-based retailer and cheesemaker Neil's Yard Dairy said it learned on Wednesday the suspect was in custody. The Metropolitan Police confirmed to NPR that a man was detained on suspicion of fraud by false representation and handling stolen goods. Over the past week, the British artisanal cheese community has been reeling after Neil's Yard Dairy announced it had been the victim of a sophisticated fraud, resulting in the loss of over 300,000 pounds worth of cloth-bound cheddar, the equivalent of more than $389,000 in the U.S. The theft involved a fraudulent buyer posing as a legitimate wholesale distributor for a major French retailer, with the cheese delivered before the discovery of the fraudulent identity. The thief made off with 950 wheels, over 22 metric tons, roughly 48,500 pounds of Cefhod, Westcombe, and Pitchfork cheddar. The wheels came from three different artisan suppliers across England and Wales.
Mm-hmm.
Between them, these cheeses have won numerous awards and are amongst the most sought-after artisan cheeses in the UK. The high monetary value of these cheeses likely made them a particular target for the thieves. And as they say here, the crime cuts deep. Cheddar, which originated in a village by the same name in Somerset, England, is the best-selling cheese in the UK and a big source of national pride.
Mm-hmm.
I guess Jamie Oliver got involved in this because he's a big fan of cheese.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, this is... I like the notion of a company named Neil's Yard Dairy is somehow a huge mm-hmm. maker of artisanal cheese, but there you go. That's England for you.
Yep.
So there you go.
So yeah, that is probably the most British story we've had on the show so far. But yeah, so with that, we're now moving on to the entertainment portion of the show. And as far as entertainment is concerned, we've got this story. Toho has greenlit a brand new Godzilla movie from the director of Godzilla Minus One.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
That was a great movie.
Mm-hmm.
One of the rare opportunities they've had for a Oscar nomination, so why not go back to him?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Takashi Yamazaki, who wrote and directed the surprise hit Godzilla Minus One, mm-hmm. will return for the new one. He's once again hailing the VFX after winning the Academy Award for Best Visual Effects in 2023. So yeah, that's great news. I don't know if they have a time frame, probably a few years before a new one will be out, but that's great to see. I definitely love to see it being a follow-up of sorts.
Mm-hmm.
Because suffice it to say, despite them quote unquote killing Godzilla, he definitely regenerates at the end.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And from there, Deadpool and Wolverine will be available on Disney Plus starting November 12th.
Yep. That's a good one of those. For people that are fans of the General Fox X-Men universe of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That is a good sort of farewell to that era of comic movies.
Yep.
So hopefully people will be able to check it out if they didn't get to in theaters.
Because
there's some good action scenes in this.
Yeah.
Including one that takes place entirely within a van. So yeah, just in time for the holiday season, as everybody expects.
Yep. So on top of that, we also got a few trailers here. We got an official trailer for Netflix's A Man on the Inside.
Yeah, this is an interesting, I think it's a show, from creator Mike Schur, who's the creator of The Good Place and co-creator of Parks and Rec and Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Mm-hmm.
Teaming up again with Ted Danson to do this new show, where he's a retired professor who, I believe his wife has passed away, so he is just kind of on his own and is just kind of existing, I guess. So he gets this, a year after his wife's passing, he becomes stuck in his routine and grown distant from his daughter. But when he spies a classified ad from a private investigator, he's inspired to roll the dice on the job and goes undercover to solve the mystery of a stolen family heirloom.
Mm-hmm.
And that leads him to kind of joining this retirement community and trying to, you know, figure out what's going on here, but also kind of enjoying being the company of other people his age that are doing a lot of interesting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It looks pretty neat. It'll be out November 21st, so I'm definitely looking forward to that. This show is also based on the events of a documentary called The Mole Agent, which was an Oscar nominee for Best Documentary Feature in 2021. So you need to kind of take a documentary to a more fictional route as a series. Mm-hmm. So that's cool.
Mm.
So yeah, there you go.
Mm. Yep. And we also got the official trailer for Netflix's That Christmas.
Yeah, this is based on a trilogy of children's books.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, this is a movie done by Richard Curtis, who's done a bunch of big movies, Four Weddings and a Funeral, Notting Hill, Love Actually, and Yesterday. This will be out December 4th, has a bunch of notable voice actors in this, but yeah, is basically about series of entwined tales about family and friends, love and loneliness, and Santa Claus making a big mistake, not to mention enormous number of turkeys. Seems pretty cool from what the trailer's shown. So yeah, that looks like it'll be a nice Christmas movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'll be out December 4th on Netflix. So that's one to keep an eye on.
Mm.
You want a very British Christmas movie. So there you go.
Yeah. And we also got an official trailer for Queer, which is believe this is based on the William S. Burroughs book.
Yeah. Yeah, so Daniel Craig is playing William S. Burroughs, who's...
Yep.
It's sort of a semi-autobiographical book.
Yep.
About his life, where he's kind of an older gay man who is kind of dealing with that back in, I think, the 1940s is when that was written. Or when it takes place. Yeah.
Yeah. That and his drug addiction, because, yeah. He was, really, really into heroin. Like, yeah. I cannot emphasize enough just how into heroin William Burroughs was.
Yeah.
Like he was so into heroin that he got so high once that he accidentally killed his, first wife by shooting her in the head because they were trying to do William Tell.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is directed by Luca Guadagnino. mm-hmm. who is a highly acclaimed director.
Mm-hmm.
Did most recently Challengers, but also known for Call Me By Your Name, I Am Love, A Bigger Splash, mm-hmm. Suspiria, We Are Who We Are,
mm-hmm.
And Bones and All. And it's like, yeah, this seems interesting. It's got some neat directorial tricks to it. Like, there's an element of the book where he's like thinking about the way things could have gone if he does other things.
Mm-hmm.
And like they play that out in the movie itself as like this kind of ghostly version of himself that he sees doing something different. And it looks really nice the way they do it. So
mm-hmm.
yeah, it looks like it could be a really cool movie.
Yep. And last but not least, we got a teaser trailer for Squid Game Season 2.
Yeah. This seems to give us a bit more of an idea of what his, or what player 456 is up to here as he's trying to get into the game and sort of stop it from within, but is dealing with the lemmings-like attitude of the rest of the players who don't really trust him for obvious reasons, but also are also blinded by the chance of winning an incredible wealth of money.
Mm.
That leads to him trying to like tell them about the games. And I assume based on what we've seen here that they changed the games midway through to
mm-hmm.
throw him off since he's spoiling what's going on for them for that. So yeah, that could be a pretty cool, way to go for this season. Yeah, so that'll be starting December 26th. And yeah, I believe they have only one more season for this. They're finishing off with the season 3.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that looks cool.
Yeah, with all of that, I believe we basically got ourselves a show, folks. We got ourselves a show. So before I go ahead and read off all the stuff about, you know, writing to us and all that, do you guys have any closing remarks you want to make about the election as far as that goes before we sort of wind it down?
Cross your fingers.
Yeah, can't wait to be over.
Yeah.
Hopefully the right way.
Yeah.
Not like 2016.
Yeah. And hopefully, you know, it won't take several days to know who the winner was, which, you know, was what we thought was going to happen on 2020. And then we woke up the next morning and what do you know? But yeah, so yeah, I'm ready to stop having to deal with all these freaking political ads every time I'm watching YouTube.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just sick of it.
Basketball and seeing an ad that ended. It was about Sherrod Brown, our U.S. Senator.
Mm-hmm.
And it ended with, I forget what the line was. I think it's Sherrod Brown's for they, them, not you. Something like that. It was like this is a better line than it deserves to be for how transphobic it is.
Yeah.
Need to stop seeing these and hearing these stupid ads.
Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, all I'm gonna say is vote. It's basically the least you can do. But yeah, with that, we're gonna go ahead and end it here. I would like to remind all of our listeners, if you got a question, comment, or something you want us to read on the air, you can get in contact with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got a link for it in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, archive.org. or any kind of podcast aggregator that you can think of. So we are going to go ahead and wind it down here. Thanks once again to Chris and Teresa for joining me on this little endeavor. All those who are listening, if you are both either a new listener or someone who is a veteran listener, please do not hesitate to share us with your friends, your family, your casual acquaintances, your coworkers, your mortal enemies, or anyone in between, because let's be honest, this election's almost over and we all could use a break. So yeah, We're going to go ahead and end it here. Join us next week, because guess what's coming up after this election, folks? Thanksgiving! Mm. Oh, yeah, that's going to be fun this year. Yeah, sleep on that, America. And good night.